This is the final call for all international passengers. Please have your passports ready and proceed.
Passport time. Take you somewhere around the world and you encounter the extraordinary life of one of my guests. And tonight that guest is a woman by the name of Maryam Issa. She fled the civil war in Somalia in 1991. She went to Kenya. Then she and her children were eventually given refugee status. They ended up moving to Australia in 1998. But she's done a whole lot of stuff since then. Incredible thing. She's studied business administration and dressmaking. She set up an East African cooking school. She's worked as an interpreter. She's written a book. She's basically done it all. If she sticks with it, she might even get a game in the current Ashes series. Maryam Issa, thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us.
Thank you very much, Walid.
Well, let's go back to your childhood and the whole that refugee experience. You were in Somalia. What are the things you remember of Somalia?
Well, I remember a lot from Somalia. I grew up in Kenya, actually. I was only 4 years of age when I left Somalia and was married again back to Somalia. And I lived there for 2 years and the civil war happened. But before that, I lived in the Arab world with my husband.
Right, so there's a whole all sorts of regions,
yes,
of the world
a bit of traveling
together in this story. Yeah. But what was it that made you flee?
It was the civil war, basically, because we were homeless, kind of, you know. And my husband did not have, you know, any status in all the other countries. So he lost his job in the Arab world after the civil war. And so we came back to Kenya, where he wasn't allowed to, you know, we either had to live in the refugee camps or go back to Somalia, where it wasn't safe. So we had to ask for refugee status in Australia. Yeah, his brother was here before him and his mother and dad. So it was a family reunion that we came through.
Yeah, right, which I suppose would have made the process a little bit easier, I imagine. But the moment when you had to leave, it sounds like a chilling moment. It was the middle of the night, as I understand it, and you had to flee with kids. How did that? I mean, so many people listening to this would have no sense of what that's like.
That was really very hard, and we hadn't anticipated the war really, and it was just in the middle of the night, as you say, and we were walking up by bombs and all that, and it was a big surprise for us. But we thought that it was something that was going to pass because of it. We thought that it was a regime thing and the government was going to be overthrown. We had no idea that it would end up to be a civil war. So it was a big surprise, and I was pregnant with my third child at the time, and I had my oldest was 3 years of age and the other one was 2 years of age.
So this is 20 years ago.
That was, yes, 25 years ago, actually.
Is it still vivid?
2 years ago. Oh, no, because I think at every place in life you are a different person. I do have a bit of memories, and as I describe in my book, the memories were brought back when we became residents in Brighton and we were celebrating with the Brightoners. It was the eve of 2010, I guess, and I went with the children to a park that is very close to our home, and there was fireworks there. So I think that moment I was really literally taken back.
Oh, wow.
Home, and it was so amazing to me how the same, you know, experience could have two different effects for different people.
And such opposite effects.
Such opposite effects, yeah. The kids were enjoying it, other people were enjoying it. But for me, it was kind of a chaos, and I was taken back to back in Somalia. And it really started to, you know, open wounds that I thought I'd forgotten.
Yeah, it shows you, I suppose, those wounds never disappear entirely, do they?
Yeah.
So, you know, you made it to Australia, and then you just unleashed this a storm of activity that's happened since. I mean, what is it that's behind all of the various things you're doing, business and then community work, writing?
I think it began, I kept a journal when I came because it was an extraordinary change that has happened to me. And as a mother who have never, ever gone out of, you know, her home and worked outside, I was immediately asked from being a passive person into an active action. And I was told, you know, this is it. You have to start. And having been dependent on my husband and my family, you know, it was so hard for me to just embrace the Western culture, which I had no prior knowledge to. And what I think compounded to that was the fact that I came to one of the whitest and, you know, wealthiest suburbs. I was given a home in Brighton. Mm. And so it was a very, you know, there was the culture shock. There was all, you know, the wealth. So you can imagine being a black person in one of the, you know, whitest suburbs and then being in a very wealthy area, having nothing. So all that contributed, I think,
to
the hardship. I wasn't, actually, my next door neighbor, after 2 weeks, he installed some cameras in his house. And
wow.
there was a little bit of, because I think we might have been the first black people in Brighton.
I see.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a shock for them.
It was a bit of shock for both, you know, sides.
Well, it's interesting. We're sitting here on a day where the federal government is talking about changing the Refugee Convention in some way because it's worried that it's somehow restricting its policy options. It's a very different Australia now. You were the only black people in the neighbourhood at the time. It's now a vastly more multicultural place. What are your reflections on where we've been and where we've come to and the tone of the debate that we're now having?
Well, I guess with coming of refugees has been Australia's, I think, we weren't the first. I mean, I don't think that we will be the last.
No.
Yeah, and it is a policy that has, we have been accepted really well by the government in terms of settlement and all that. And there are amazing organizations as well, charities that work towards that and help refugees so much. So in terms of that, it's really Australia is beautiful. And because of the diaspora world, we are also, we have families around the world. And I think Australia is counted as one of the best places to settle as a refugee.
That's an encouraging thing to hear. I mean, yep. Just before I let you go, you founded an organisation called Resilient Aspiring Women, or RAW.
Yes.
It's a not-for-profit organisation. It brings together women of all backgrounds. Resilience is an interesting concept. I mean, is this something that you think young women really need in Australia today?
I think so, yeah. Not only young women, but as young boys as well. I think resilience has been lost in the Australian culture today because we tend as parents to be very, you know, nurturing towards our children. We always have been, but we forget that they also need a bit of hardship to be part of growth. And giving them too much, I think, is something that we have come to. And our children do need that resilience, and they do need to understand
the growth and the capacity to produce. It's a capacity you have in abundance, Mariam. It's been wonderful to have you come into the studio for a chat. Ramadan Mubarak, by the way.
Ramadan Mubarak.
Good of you to come in when you should probably be eating something somewhere. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Not at all. Mariam Issa.
Thank you for having me.
Who describes herself as an author, writer, mother, storyteller, visionary, social activist, community connector. God, exhausted just reading that list. News up now, 7 o'clock. We'll be back in 5.